You're listening to Bottom Shelf Bitcoin. This is episode 37.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, the podcast that puts Bitcoin knowledge within everyone's reach. As always, I'm your host, Josh Humphrey, and today with me is the creator of Biddle Bootcamp, Justin Moon. Justin, thanks for coming on the show.
Awesome. We're here in downtown Austin, and we got a little construction in the background. Maybe you can hear it.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys can hear that, but...
We've got an award-winning library here in Austin. It's like the best library in the country, according to some... stupid newspaper.
It's a really nice library though, for real. Like I was up there earlier studying on the, and then I went out on the, there's a garden up on the roof, so it's very, yeah, it's very
like
fancy.
It feels like a nightclub, you know? It's like, oh, I'm supposed to read up here?
Yeah. Well,
without a mojito, I can't.
Yeah, there was,
can't get a mojito.
When I first went up there, literally there was a somebody walking around, like, in a couple, and I guess they're like planning maybe having their reception up there or something.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I see a lot of that.
None of that has to do with Bitcoin, but...
No. We got to start it on a friendly note.
Yeah, though, yeah.
Then get into the complete destruction of the corrupt finance, whatever.
Right. Start out a little easy and shallow,
yeah, exactly,
before we get into the heavy stuff.
And then ramp up.
Yeah. So,
Actually, I will say one thing. We're right by this river, and I watched his YouTube show recently. There's kids fishing in this river, and they were catching all these monstrous fish. So now I kind of want to go fishing, get a fishing pole, and go try to catch some fish down there.
They pulled the big fish out of this one,
yeah,
specifically?
Yeah, right here. You could see the library in the background. So.
Oh, nice.
Neither here nor there. Let's get into this stuff.
All right. So kind of give us, I know you were not too long ago on Marty Bent's show, so we don't have to go as deep as all that, but... kind of give us a little bit of your background and then how you got into all this.
Yeah, so I'm, I guess the thing that got me really interested in Bitcoin is that, developed kind of a worldview that free markets are really the important thing, and that's why we're wealthy, and that's where wealth comes from, and wealth is good because that just means like a high standard of living, you know, no disease, none of the bad things and more of the good stuff. And so it's a good thing to strive for, and free markets are really powerful, and so I kind of developed that view over the last few years and got into startups in San Francisco, and then the realization was understanding kind of a couple months after the last the bubble popped like a year ago, was understanding that that there was no free market for money, right? That we had we had these like more or less free markets for certain things, but the market for capital itself, sort of like the thing that coordinates all these other markets, was not only regulated, it was completely state directed.
Yeah.
In like a Soviet manner, you know? And this had just never occurred to me. So all the times I'd heard about Bitcoin before, I always thought it was only something that would be interested if you were breaking the rules or if you were a really big nerd, you know?
Yeah.
And so I didn't understand that there was, that it was like a, one way to look at it was that it was a project to like reclaim the most important market and make it free again, and that would, you know, probably make like, according to my belief system and worldview, which may or may not be right, but it's the best I've got, it would make us much more wealthy and at the expense of no one, you know, because free trade makes both sides, any kind of voluntary transaction makes both sides more wealthy by definition, or they wouldn't agree to it.
Right. It's voluntary, so it's a win-win.
Yeah, so it's a win-win. And so when I kind of realized that, and it was mostly with the help of Pierre Richard, Bitstein, their Nakamoto Institute website, their noted podcast, their buddy Saifedean Ammous's Bitcoin Standard, and then I took Jimmy Song's programming class. Basically,
okay.
those four guys and those four experiences were 100% responsible for me coming to these realizations. despite having heard about Bitcoin for like 5 or 6 years and not finding it very interesting.
So
I think one of the things that that my story kind of articulates is that I would have been sympathetic to this idea the entire time, but I never got a good explanation at once, you know?
So
that's,
was there
a big problem in Bitcoin.
Yeah. So was there something specific for you that triggered that realization, or was it just kind of a lot of things that gradually built up to it, or?
That's a good question. I think really reading through the Bitcoin standard was when I really got fired up about it. Just realizing how much different the world's financial and monetary systems were within even one lifespan. Like, you know, at the beginning of World War I, you know, you could just look up on an index card for the translations between every currency, because they were just, you just have to do arithmetic on fractions of weights of gold.
Right.
And so just kind of understanding that, and understanding how a big part of it was reading this book by Thomas Sowell, Basic Economics, where he just walks you through a lot of kind of basic economic ideas, and you understand how, in some sort of miraculous fashion, the markets can sort of you can get this really sophisticated coordination arise in a market where like it's far smarter than any one kind of participant, and so that sort of gets you over the hump of thinking you need like an enlightened central banker, or that you need sort of these government watchdogs kind of anywhere. And I guess that this whole class of ideas, I guess it kind of like opened my mind.
So what made you want to read the Bitcoin Standard, though?
Yeah, so that's actually a funny question, because there were like two books that were published on the topic of crypto assets in general. There was like this book by Chris Bernisky called Crypto Assets, and there was this book by Seyfi Dean Amous called The Bitcoin Standard. And they seem to take different views, and I was naive or I was not sophisticated, so I bought them both in the same Amazon purchase. I read them both, and I read Chris Bernisky first. And Chris Bernisky sort of like frames this book as a modern intelligent investor or security analysis. These are books by this guy named Benjamin Graham. Benjamin Graham's the guy who taught Warren Buffett to buy stocks.
Okay.
That was Warren Buffett's mentor. He was his teacher at Columbia Business School, and then Buffett worked for him for a couple years afterwards. And after that, Buffett went on his own and became the richest man in the world at many points of time. I don't think he is currently. But he was this amazing Renaissance man who founded the discipline of security analysis. You know, how can you value, basically how do you value the future cash flows of a business?
Right? Okay.
Because you had at the time you had all these like, this wild speculation in the 20s and on railroads, and nobody really had any sort of a rigorous framework to value securities. And so this guy was one of the great minds in finance ever. And so Bernisky kind of sort of tries to write in this tradition. And having read these books, I just thought it just completely fell short. Like I was completely unimpressed with it. And so then I jumped into the Bitcoin Standard, and on about every page of the Bitcoin Standard, you hear a different viewpoint than you've heard before.
You get
alternative histories. You see emphases that are different from what you'd get in school or from what you get in a newspaper or on television. Safe comes at things from just a very different perspective. And while sometimes his ideas are a little shocking, like, I couldn't refute them in the same way I could laugh at, and like I would try, and I couldn't poke holes in them like I could in Bernisky's ideas. And so that was the thing that really kind of got me interested, is just reading a bunch of books and doing a lot of investigation before I'm just trying to make sense of it at a high level, like what is going on. And but yeah, as for like the why, when I realized that, like, I don't remember having the shocking moment that, oh, holy shit, these are... I mean, I think that was kind of it. Like, it was between that and reading Thomas Sowell, where, you know, you understand, like, Saul is really interesting because he writes about just how catastrophic the Soviet central planners were in their, like, it was this, like, they were the smartest people in one of the most populous countries in the world. Like, the central planners in Soviet Russia were not, you know, they were the best of the best, and yet they, like, you see, for example, these anecdotes where, like, you know, they tried to plan the market for paint, you know, and so they would have they would try to tell everyone, you know, this is how many, like, you know, gallons of paint to create, and these are the different colors you'd create it, and, like, so for example, like a tractor company, they wouldn't be told which color paint to use, and so they would just, like, stockpile whatever they would be told to, like, create tractors in red paint. And so okay. They would just, like, corner the market on red paint. And red paint would go through the roof, and the rest of the economy would suffer while the tractor company had, like, a billion gallons of red paint. And so it's, yeah, like, that's not a great retelling of the story, but Saul is great at explaining all of the problems with the centrally planned economy. And like, reading Safe's book shortly thereafter, I was like, holy shit, this all directly applies. I think that was the connection.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I almost wish that Safe had not named it the Bitcoin Standard, because he doesn't even get into Bitcoin really until, like, the last third of the book.
Well, and the funny thing is, like, I mean, I'm not really sure exactly what is meant by the Bitcoin Standard. Like, there's this idea in his book that you could have like, you know, 10,000 small central banks. I think that's one of the ideas. Like, you'll have a lot of these sort of, like central banks. I haven't read it in a couple months now, so I forget exactly what his claim is, or his vision was in this small section. But it was like, you know, basically it would be much harder to you'll have much smaller central banking kind of, like, currency issuing people, and everything will be backed by Bitcoin. And I actually don't know if I agree with that. Like, I think it's much more likely that you'll have these completely sort of, like, trustless protocols like Lightning, rather than some sort of a thing that's more analogous to the gold standard. Like, I think that part of it, I don't even know if I agree with that vision, funnily enough. But I don't really care.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's
if it's all voluntary, then it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, exactly how it comes out, no one really knows, and it's a complete crapshoot to even guess. And disagreements there are kind of academic, really, because all of the same kind of underlying causal reasons for either one apply in either case, and it's kind of academic which one happens.
I'm kind of with you. I'm not sure that there will be these central banks, but I think there will always be a place, though, for something that holds that has a high level of physical security. So things like what Casa is doing, mm-hmm. or something like that, where you have I guess maybe that's not exactly what Casa is doing, but I can see them doing it at some point. You know, like a safety deposit box kind of place that holds one of many of your keys for a multi-sig account or something like that.
Yeah, that's one of the really the things you start thinking about. You know, like, there's an interesting company here in Austin called Onchain that's working on similar things. I mean, if it works, if Bitcoin works, you're going to have this like, incredibly sort of, like, vast industry of people that help you manage your private key risk.
Right.
You know? And you're going to have... You're not just going to do one thing. You're going to do, like, many things. And it's, like, you're going to constantly be hedging, you know, one strategy with the next, and making sure that, like, no one group of people could be corrupted and make off with the funds. And I do agree, like, that's a really promising aspect for Bitcoin businesses. It's one of the only places where they can be profitable, actually. Like, you look at the people who are that are able to make money, and it's people like Casa, it's people like Trezor or Ledger, these types of groups. And then it's exchanges, which do it to a lesser degree, but they still custody coins.
Yeah, for sure.
That's something that people, while we might condemn it, that's something a lot of people find useful.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know that those will ever go away, unless the fiat itself goes away, mm-hmm. because you've always got to have easy on ramps, because there's always going to be people looking for that easy way in. I mean, that's where I bought my Bitcoin originally. Yeah. You know, was through Coinbase. So,
and on this idea of physical security, I mean, I think there's this guy, Jeff Deist. He's the head of the Mises Institute. He was on Stefan Levera's podcast.
Yeah.
And he's always a little more hesitant about Bitcoin, because he's probably most of his donors are gold bugs.
Right, so right.
I don't think he ever really says exactly what he thinks. I bet he's quite a bit more bullish on it than he lets on. But he had this great point where he's saying, you know, even if Bitcoin succeeds in the most wild fashion, there'll still, to get back to your physical security thing, I think there'll still be physical gold that will be a monetary asset in some fashion or another. And I'm sympathetic to that view too. It's there's still these things that have worked forever. You know, you don't need to completely throw them out the door. I mean, it'd be cool if that. I could see a lot of people still storing wealth from that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think it competes with Bitcoin, really.
Because it's so hard, and it's so hard to use.
And people who are young, I mean, if you're Generation Z, I'm a millennial, right? If you're a teenager now, I think the idea of owning and backing wealth with gold is kind of almost funny.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, as they get older, they'll maybe grow out of that to some degree. But I think it's really hard. You know, when you go and hang around people who are young, I did this programming workshop in Miami, Bitcoin programming workshop in Miami last week. And one of the really cool things is that, it was hosted by this company, Bitstop. They were the ones that organized it.
So okay.
Drew Barnard was he's the CEO of Bitstop. So it's a Bitcoin ATM company.
Oh, okay.
So he invited me down there during the week they have this big conference. And so one of the cool things is that most of their employees were these 20-ish year old guys who had recently dropped out of school and were getting, having really good salaries, basically being paid to learn Bitcoin programming, doing interesting projects. I was so jealous of these guys that they, at that age, I was paying for education.
Right.
They are getting paid for
Yeah,
education.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's a completely different thing. And to people like this, I just don't think, I think everyone who's older than that underestimates how natural Bitcoin will feel to them and how strange, yeah, just how natural Bitcoin will feel to them and how an internet native currency just makes sense.
Yeah, agreed.
And to some degree, adoption is, in light of that, I think it's largely a waiting game. It's if you just wait 40 years for,
Yeah, exactly.
For these people to be allocating capital, I mean, it's hard to imagine that there's not a lot of it allocated to a digitally scarce asset like Bitcoin.
Yeah, I've tried a couple times with my son, he's only but explaining Bitcoin to him, and it's almost more tedious because I feel this need to go back and explain how our current system works.
Yeah.
And that's the confusing part.
Yeah.
Is explaining how our current system works, and it's I think I just need to give it some time.
Yeah,
Hey
buddy, you know you can't get a bank account?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Here's a wallet.
Right.
I think that's one of the funnier things, is it's like, well, you don't even, you should know this is the only one you're allowed to use.
Right. Okay, so tell me a little bit about Biddle Bootcamp and how you got that started.
Yeah, so it was when I got involved in Bitcoin 6 months ago, my initial theory was that I'd try to get involved in some sort of startup in the space eventually. But I sort of changed my mind a little bit on that. I think it's pretty hard to do a startup, especially in a bear market. And especially a pure Bitcoin one. I mean, most of the startups involve basically selling Bitcoin-looking non-Bitcoin things to people.
Yeah.
Under the impression that they will have Bitcoin's properties. And I don't think that's a very ethically sound thing to do. So I think it's really hard to do a Bitcoin startup. When I got involved, it was I took this class with Jimmy Song, and And that was really nice because I kind of fell in love with programming again. I'd taken like a year and a half off from programming after like a really intense startup experience where I got a little burnt out. And I built like a ton of stuff for a company that was almost if you've ever seen like today, Square just announced they were making debit cards for their users, and like a year ago, they Square Cash announced the debit card. Like we basically prototyped this product for them.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah,
our platform, and so if we had pulled it off, we would just be like, we would be doing really well.
Yeah, yeah.
This product makes a lot of money.
Right.
2% of they get roughly 1.5-2% of every transaction, and so. So that was what I did previously, and I was like the first employee at the startup, and it was my first programming job ever, so I just was drinking from the fire hose constantly for a few years.
Right.
And so, yeah, when I got involved, I was a little burnt out on programming. I took this class, really loved it, and was kind of shocked to see there wasn't anything else besides 1 2-day class by Jimmy. And so I was like, okay, well, this is going to be my place. I'm just going to help create more educational resources, and mostly with the end goal of trying to get people to the point where they could be employable as a developer in Bitcoin, and not all coins, Bitcoin specifically. And so that's where it started. And after I went to a conference last summer, I started giving these like free online workshops just to friends I met at these conferences, and they seemed interested. I didn't think they'd continue coming, but they did continue coming. Every week on the Sunday, we'd get together, and I'd give them a little spiel about what I learned that week. It's mostly on like the Bitcoin network, the networking aspect, you know, how to communicate between different nodes, how to communicate with a full node, basically.
Yeah.
In by hand, without using any libraries or any tools, just how to do it, how to compose messages and how to interpret messages and how to get the information you wanted, and all that sort of thing. And so I was sort of shocked that they were really interested. And I seemed to be pretty good at it. And so then a couple months later, after doing that on the side for a couple months, I did a free version in October of Bitto Bootcamp. And like 300 people signed up. I had a lot of provisos, like, hey, this is going to be a bit of a train wreck, guys. Like, I'm doing it. I'm just basically validating the demand for something like this. I'm just checking out if there's an opportunity here. And it's going to be a bumpy ride. And sure enough, there was a ton of interest, and it was a bumpy ride. And so the next month, I did a paid version, and I've been kind of like growing it and raising the price every month. And one of the things I learned was that I think there's not a ton of demand for people who are trying to, experienced software developers who are trying to switch from their current career to like working in Bitcoin specifically, because there just aren't a ton of jobs for these people at the moment. I think eventually there could be. I think eventually there could just be a massive amount of employment for these people. But at the moment, not really. But what I realize is that there's a lot of these like sophisticated hodlers who are not technical at all. And they'd like to become a little more technical. Their interest in Bitcoin has made them, for the first time in their lives, interested in software generally.
Yeah.
I'm curious about how it works. And starting to think about maybe learning how it works. And so I started meeting these people who had actually never coded before, and they would I'd sort of coach them through an intro course. Like there's this course, SoloLearn.com, their Python course is what I recommend. Code Academy is also good, but I think the SoloLearn's a little better. And so I'd sort of coach them through that, and I've had a number of students now that have gone from zero to actually making like a contribution to an open source project.
Oh, very cool.
Like one of them just added a Tor integration to Pierre Richard's node launcher.
Oh, very nice.
The software that helps you run both a Bitcoin and a Lightning full node, or a node. So you can get the whole Lightning experience on your desktop with like one click of a button. You just run like an installer.exe file on your Windows computer and it works. So it's a magical experience, and there's all kinds of things that are missing, and one of them is Tor. And so, yeah, this guy who didn't really have any experience managed to actually add that. And so, with a lot of these people, I don't know if they have ambitions to be professional software engineers in the near term, but I think it's a very enriching experience to get to the point where they kind of could, to become like sophisticated tinkerers. And if nothing else, that'll help these people basically you know, avoid the FUD, the kind of technically uninformed market fear that is spread by propagandists, and also to help them protect their own private keys, to help them become better full node operators, to help them do all these things. I think it kind of helps to get a little sophistication with software. And if you're going to opt in fully to the Bitcoin economy and to the to Bitcoin as a store of wealth and as kind of like a tool for individual sovereignty, I think you ought to learn a little bit about software if you're interested. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at now. I have a lot of these people who are sort of like, they really get Bitcoin and they're trying to upskill their technical understanding a little bit. And frankly, they're a joy to work with because they're all super smart. They're all really interesting. We interact on Twitter and on Slack constantly. And they're making great progress because they're so motivated, right? Usually in an academic environment, nobody's motivated at all.
Right. And they're there because they have to be.
Exactly. And so I'm like really good at teaching, but I've never done any teaching anywhere before because it generally sucks because it's coerced. Like the students are not there voluntarily. They're sort of forced to be there. And so, this has been sort of a delight to encounter these people who are extremely, extremely motivated to learn, and they generally get it, and they don't need you to do things for them. They just need a little hand-holding. They need, like, strategic hand-holding. At the right point, you need to jump in and spend, like, 2 hours with them and get them unstuck. And then, you know, we have a pretty pretty thorough, like, curriculum where we do, like, 3 projects that give them a lot of understanding of a couple aspects of Bitcoin, and so from that point they can kind of they're getting close to be ready to jump into their own projects. So yeah, we could probably discuss those. They're kind of interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, before we get into that, so what does someone need to know if they want to be a part of this? Like, what do they need to know coming into it?
Yeah, I think so the one prerequisite is to take like an introduction to Python programming class. If sololearn.com, if you just search like solo learn Python, you'll find the link to their Python class. It's free and it all happens in your browser. You don't have to download any software to your computer, because that's actually a really confusing thing, you know, to learn how to use the terminal and a text editor and all these tools. It's actually pretty tough. That probably confused me for a few years and set back my programming career because I couldn't figure it out. And so being able to do it all in the browser is really nice. And so if you complete that course, you're probably ready to go. You're going to struggle quite a bit to begin with, but I think that's actually fine and actually pretty healthy. I think you'll make really good progress, and you can always retake classes. Like I've had a couple of students who's try 1 month and kind of fall behind, and then they know exactly what they need to learn. They know what they need to improve because they encounter things that they just couldn't get, and so then I kind of direct them to do some, you know, to pursue some resources in these areas to try to improve their fundamental understanding of programming a little bit better, and they can come back next month, you know, just as if they'd signed up that month, and then they, you know, they tend to make it a lot further that next time.
Very cool.
So that's I have the bar pretty low, just one intro class. And you can usually complete that in like 20, 30 hours. So you know, you can get there in half a week if you're really motivated.
Yeah.
Well,
so
I actually learned to code. It's kind of funny. I learned to code doing Code Academy at a hackathon.
Oh wow.
I was studying abroad in Hong Kong, and somebody invited me to a hackathon. I'd never heard of a hackathon, and it sounded really cool. So I went. And the way it works is everybody sort of presents ideas at the beginning, and they form little teams. And in 48 hours, you try to build some idea. Like a really crappy, minimal version of it. And so I tried to, like, join a team, but no one wanted me because I was useless. And so I'm like, okay, screw it. I'm going to learn how to code. So I found this Code Academy site, went to the corner of the room, and just sat there for 2 days. I slept in this room, this strange place in Hong Kong, a strange country, and went through the entire Code Academy curriculum. At the end of the day, I kind of knew how to program.
Very cool.
I went too fast. Of course, I missed a lot. I had to go back through it a second time. But that was basically what got me going. So it's really possible. You don't need you definitely do not need a university degree to learn this stuff.
Yeah. So why Python specifically? I mean, if Bitcoin is written in C,
yeah,
Why Python?
Yeah, so there is if you try to learn Python, if you try to learn programming with C, many people will not have a good time, because there's a lot of there's a lot more stuff you need to think about. You need to manage memory, the memory of your program, manually, and many other things. There's many ways to shoot yourself in the foot. And in general, it's very hard to produce a finished product with C. It's very hard to...
Hold that closer to your... Yeah, there you go.
Okay. In general, it's very hard to produce a finished product with the C programming language if you're a complete beginner.
Okay.
Like, so, you know, if you want to make a Connect 4 game or like some really basic thing as a beginner, like, in general, you have to write a lot more code. Like, it takes two or three times as much code to produce it compared to Python. Python's just far more concise, but it comes at a performance cost. And for a beginner, it's 100% chance that you do not need a performance critical. You're not writing a performance critical program if you're a noob or a complete beginner. You're writing something very basic, and you want the simplest language you can get your hands on. And so that's why Python's great. Many powerful Bitcoin products are written in Python. The firmware for Trezor and Cold Card is written largely in Python, at least the like application logic part of it. And the Electrum wallet is written in Python. I believe Armory, one of the better wallets in the past, was written in Python. There's many things that the, like PyraShard's node launcher is written in Python. There's many parts of the stack that are written in Python. And so these are like applications. These are not the protocol itself. These are not
right.
The Bitcoin or the second layer protocols. For those, you do want something like C or C++ or Rust. There are these like super fast languages where you have more responsibility as a programmer. You have to manage more. You have to manage the memory, like how your machine, you have to give your computer more precise instructions. And there are many ways to shoot yourself in the foot, and it's harder, but you can achieve much greater speed that way. And so for a protocol like Bitcoin, where the fundamental limitation is the big problem is the speed of initial block download. You just need initial block download to be as fast as possible. You just want the fastest programming language you can get. But, you know, so that's why they choose C++. But for your average beginner, you're not going to start by contributing to the protocol.
Yeah.
Those are the most sophisticated developers in the world. And so you'll want to start somewhere more like an application or, you know, make a little, one of the first project we do in our class is we make like sort of a little mini Bitcoin clone.
Okay.
It's basically a shitcoin. It's an educational shitcoin.
Okay.
And so the point is that you the best way to understand Bitcoin is to actually implement it, actually write the Bitcoin protocol yourself and make a really naive and simple version of it that is not, you know, doesn't have all the bells and whistles and optimizations of the real version, but has all the core things like peer-to-peer networking and proof-of-work mining and this sort of thing.
Okay.
And so yeah, that's where you'd want to start as a beginner. And then once you make a couple applications, if you can understand how to implement some of these ideas in a simple language like Python, then maybe you can sort of upgrade and attempt to make a contribution to the protocol itself. Maybe you write some unit tests. The testing framework on Bitcoin Core is Python. So if you actually go to GitHub and look at the what percentage of the repository is written in different languages, most of it's in C++, but the second most used language on the repository itself is actually Python.
Oh, very cool.
So it is a good way, if you do want to contribute to Bitcoin Core itself, if you have this sort of arbitrary goal that that's what you need to do in your life, learning Python is actually a good way. A lot of people only contribute to the testing code. And as we've seen with like the inflation bug last summer, sometimes you need like better testing is important because we do have bugs. And we need better testing. So yeah, it's kind of a long-winded answer, but that's a reason why Python's a good idea.
Okay. So go ahead. Let's jump back then and kind of walk us through what people can expect to kind of learn and go through with the Biddle Boot Camp.
Yeah. So we have like four sections to the class. So the first thing we do is we build this little mini Bitcoin, and we start with the idea is that the best way to understand Bitcoin is to try to actually construct it yourself. And this was, I believe this because this was what was most helpful to me when I was getting involved. I found this project called Tiny Chain, written by a Bitcoin Core contributor, and it's in Python, and this helped me probably more than anything else did, because in one file, it has all the core mechanics of Bitcoin. You can kind of see how they all relate to each other, you can tinker with it, and it's very hard to tinker with the real Bitcoin software, because it's like weighed down with optimization. So you which is what you want for a real thing.
Right.
But you don't want to start with a real thing. You want to start with a toy. And so building a toy is great. And so one of the difficulties in sort of understanding one of these like toy implementation of Bitcoin, of which there are a few, it's still a big program. It's like 1,000 lines of code. And it's not clear why you have something like for example the transaction inputs and outputs, or you know, why do you need proof of work, why can't you have something simpler, like, you know, why and so with all these things there's this kind of like nagging voice in the back of your head, like why do we have all these complicated things? And so the way I try to teach them in my class is I start with a really dumb version of digital cash. It's called PNG coin. So if you go to my YouTube channel, you could just probably search Justin Moon and find me. There's some of the videos from the class are on a playlist called Biddle Bootcamp. The first one is the PNG coin. It is the dumbest thing I could think of. It has every single problem that a naive version of digital cash could have. It can be counterfeit. It can be double spent. Transactions can be forged. It's very, very dumb. And so it's a great starting point, though, because it actually could be digital cash. You end up with these files. The transfers are photographs of paper signatures, which say, like, I, Justin, you know, give one PNG coin to Josh, and then you sign it. So it's kind of like a Bitcoin transaction, but it's just really naive and simplified. And so you could actually use this as digital cash. You could save the file, send it over email, and in practice it would never work, right?
Right.
And so what we do is we iteratively remove, like, you know, in about 10 or 15 steps, we iteratively remove the worst part of it. And along the way, all the major features of Bitcoin are introduced. And so at every step you see, oh, this is why it's useful, right? Like we clearly made it better by introducing this. And so it took me a couple months to actually put this together, and it was really difficult. And so I'm really proud of how it turned out. And I've had a lot of these like very, very unsophisticated coders actually make it all the way through. And the first program they ever wrote was like a little mini Bitcoin that's 800 lines long and has all these crazy features. And I think that's really awesome. And I was surprised that so many of them made it through. And so that's the first project. And we're eventually going to deploy that like in this next month. The next class starts on Monday, like the 21st, I believe. I think Monday the 21st. And so the next class, we're going to actually deploy this thing. So we're going to deploy it on a real network, and you know, practice, build a little like a mining pool, stuff
Cool.
that. Try to like GPU mine it. try to build a little lightning exchange for it, and do some little fun things like that. Try to 51% attack it. Try to steal each other's coins. See if we can crash nodes. See if we can just do all of the kind of adversarial thinking and. Practice these skills that are important to really contribute to the real Bitcoin. And so that's the first project, and it's quite intense, and I think that's probably worth the price of admission, just that one project. I don't think there's a better introduction to how Bitcoin works, honestly.
We'll be back with more Bottom Shelf Bitcoin in a minute, but first let me tell you about the sponsors of this show. If you've been listening to the show, you know I've recently launched Bitcoin Merit Badge, my online shop that sells Velcro-backed merit badges and morale patches about Bitcoin. These are a great way to show off your skills or just have a laugh about Bitcoin. What you might not know is that these patches are manufactured by our friends at Patcheon. If you're looking for a custom embroidered patch, Patcheon is your answer. They work with you to turn your image into a high-quality patch with several options for backing, including adhesive, Velcro, plastic backed, and more. So if you're looking for a patch for your motorcycle group or special event like conferences or just something fun for yourself, check out patcheon.uk.
And so the next thing we do is we do a bunch of, we start to work with the real Bitcoin protocol. The second project begins with, we go to this site, bitnodes.earn.com. And this site has a listing of all the nodes on the network. And it's generated by earn.com's crawler. They wrote a crawler that could go and, you know, visit one node and ask who they know about. And then it would go visit all those nodes and all those, you know, the, and so you know, within 10 hops or something, you can get all the way across the network and visit every node that's visible, at least, that isn't hidden. So they catalog about 10,000 nodes at the moment. And so what we do is we go there, we grab an IP address and a port. That's like an IP address, an address of a computer on the TCP system, the Internet Protocol system, is defined by a pair, the IP address and the port. So the IP address says like which machine, the port is like basically which program running on that machine. And so we do that and we try to connect to them and it doesn't work. We connect and they don't say anything to us. The connection is alive, but nothing happens. And within about a minute, it times out. It sends it just stops. And so the question is like, well, why wouldn't that peer tell us anything? Why aren't they telling us blocks and transactions? That's what we wanted, right? Well, we didn't introduce ourselves properly, right? And so we started from like zero, and we try to connect and we fail. And so you see a similar kind of pattern here. You try to build a really basic thing and then slowly introduce all the ideas in kind of a natural way. And so I teach them this thing called the version handshake. This is a series of four messages that needs to be sent in order to establish a connection between two Bitcoin peers. And so this is something every time your full node turns on, this is what it does with every one of its peers.
Cool.
It has to do this to initiate the connection. And so we do that, and then we actually go and write a crawler. So we basically re-implement this Bitnode site. And it's really interesting because it's a completely different paradigm. In order to get all the information, all you have to do is compose messages correctly. You don't need an API key. You don't need permission. Like, I think this is a great emphasis of the permissionless aspect of Bitcoin. And so after that, we try to do a little, like, we do initial block download, learn how to request block headers, how to validate the proof of work, and so these are things we all did in our little mini Bitcoin project, but now we're doing them for real on the real one.
Oh, okay.
And it's a lot easier once you've done it in a little sandbox when you get to the real one. It's like, oh, I already know these ideas. Now I just need to know all the quirks of the real Bitcoin network. And so we do initial block download. I think in the future we're going to do some kind of SPV type stuff. So it's all like this network programming, because that's one way to look at Bitcoin. And there's like, I kind of feel like there's no one way to describe Bitcoin. You can't really, like, there's no one sentence that satisfactorily describes it. You have to sort of look at it from a few angles. Like, it's a multifaceted thing, kind of like a diamond. You have to like look at it from a few directions to really get the experience. And so the networking part of it is one aspect of it, and it's truly like a file sharing network. Like, that's largely, it's a file sharing network with one file, the blockchain, right? That's what it is.
Yeah.
And so that's the stress of this portion of the course, is like, let's really dive into the file sharing aspect of Bitcoin and get so we really kind of master that aspect of it. And so that's like the second, you know, another 10 days worth of work. And the last portion, we build a hardware wallet. So we build it using the same tools that Trezor's wallet uses. We actually use the cryptography code they wrote and open sourced in order to do like digital signatures to sign a transaction, in order to do all the different cryptographic manipulations that are required to sign a transaction. And like the whole idea, so this project is kind of a meditation on the private key, right? Because the private key is really important.
Right.
It's just going to be amazing how much wealth is going to be stored on these little, you know, strings of information, strings of characters. It's really wild. And so that's kind of what I want the students to get out of this next portion. Like, you know, the networking stuff is about the permissionless aspect and the open architecture and everything. And this one's more about what is a private key and what can we do with it and how can we keep it safe? And so to do that, we actually make a hardware wallet. And the point of a hardware wallet is that you take this one little piece of information and you remove it from your computer. Like, by default, it will just be sitting as a file on your computer. And you just want to move that. You want to move that because all kinds of things are running on your computer. Your computer is like a jungle. And there's all kinds of little critters and, ghouls and goblins running around on your computer, especially if you're not very sophisticated with what you choose to install and where you go. It's quite terrifying once you learn more about it. And so the idea is you want to take this precious gem of your private key from the dangerous jungle of your computer's file system and move it into like a little gated community. Put it into a little gated, gentrified little gated community called the Hardware Wallet. And this Hardware Wallet, the only way you can get in is by going in the front gate, right? And to do that, you have to talk to security and all this stuff. So what you do is you make a really simple protocol that you can only basically send a message where your computer itself requests a signature using the private key. And so that's the idea. Like, this Hardware Wallet can basically do one thing. It can create these private keys and then can sign stuff with them. And you just move that into like a little gated community called the Hardware Wallet. So we actually go through this whole exercise of doing that. And along the way, we learn a lot about, we actually work with some C code. We learn how to build C code. This stuff that Trezor put out. We modify some of it a little bit. So that aspect of the project, and we also do some more transaction construction projects. How do you put together certain types of transactions? Where the networking aspect of the class is more on the verification side of Bitcoin. This one is more on activities, like the actual things you can do with it, like the creation of transactions and the moving of money, right? And that's kind of what we do. And how do you eventually we'll do some like multi-sig. How do you do a SegWit transaction? How do you do these various types of things? What exactly do you need to sign with the private key, right? It's not just any old message. You have to sign something very specific. So these are the things we cover in the hardware section of the course. And with both of these things, you end up with like a sandbox of cool, like, my goal is to leave you with three different sandboxes you can play in and you can tinker with. And I believe that's where the real learning is going to happen. It's not necessarily what I teach you. It's what you do with what I sort of set you up with. And so there's all kinds of things, directions you can move with a hardware wallet. There's all kinds of directions you can do with a little like crawler or a little initial block download script that's naive and isn't complete, doesn't have everything, but a little mini Bitcoin. There's all kinds of things you can do. And so hopefully at the end of the class they have these three little sandboxes, have experienced some different aspects of Bitcoin, and at the end I supervise a final project, either something that that's their own idea, or I help onboard them onto an open source project like Pierre Shard's Node Launcher is something that a bunch of them are starting to work on. So I don't give like a certificate or a diploma because I don't really think those are valuable. I want them to have actual proof of that they made something.
Proof of work.
Proof of work, exactly. Damn right. Yeah. So proof of work, yeah. And so that's what's valuable. That's what an employer in this space or an employer anywhere in software is going to care about. They don't care about your diploma. I've never shown my diploma to anybody.
Yeah.
And that's all they care about. And so that's my emphasis. I'm going to drag you until you do that.
So
that's the sell.
Yeah. So you keep up with these people who have taken your previous courses.
Oh yeah. They're, so that's kind of the, they doesn't really end in my opinion. Like even, so I think the community aspect of it is the best part. It's like the Biddle Bootcamp now has about 74 people in it, in the, our Slack group. And these are like some of the most motivated participants in the Bitcoin economy. They're really learning quickly. A lot of them have gone from zero to competent in a few months. Many of them are very interesting. They're located all over the world. So like when I go to, so when I was in Miami this last week, two of them showed up.
Very cool.
Like basically anywhere I go, there's going to be a few of them. And it's true for the other students too. Like sometimes I'll be like, hey, I'm in LA. Any of you here? And like two people will say, yeah, I'm in LA. And so it's like a really close-knit community of people who are trying to actively contribute to the sort of Bitcoin revolution, if you want to call it that. And so that's the idea, is eventually these classes will probably stop. I'll end up doing something else, but the community will live on. And you know, cause I think the Bitcoin project is going to be a long journey, right? It's not going to be done in 5-10 years. So hopefully this group of people will stick together. And I mean, the funny thing is we all follow each other on Twitter now. We all interact with each other a ton. So it becomes pretty close knit.
Yeah. Very cool. Do you think, do you think everyone needs to learn how to code?
Oh, no. I think sometimes people get kind of annoying with this. They, like, I think there's this fundamental, there's always spectrums with ability and with any kind of trait. And so one of these spectrums is like how oriented you are to things or to people, right? And so people who make really good programmers are like very oriented towards things. They like mechanical things. They like logic. They do not like emotions. They do not like ambiguity.
Right.
These people make great programmers. And somebody who's like very oriented towards people, very empathetic, very understanding, very intuitive, all these things, it's like they're probably not going to be the best coder. They don't like mechanical things. They maybe didn't like math in high school. Type of person probably, like the thing you need to do in life is you need to figure out like what are you uniquely good at, and then do that. And so, you know, for many people it won't be programming, but I think for many people it is, and I think it's been sold as something that only like really brilliant people can do, and that's not the case at all. You know, I think probably at least half the population could do it.
Yeah.
And could enjoy doing it, And so there's also a distinction of whether you should do it professionally or just kind of tinker with it. And that's the thing I really try to encourage, is like first tinker with it. First play around with it and see if you get hooked. See if you really like it. And if you do, then maybe you can make a next decision of whether you want to pursue it professionally. But I think too many people are binary on whether it's you don't do any or, you know, do it for 40 years. It's like there's a whole middle ground. And so yeah, I don't think everyone should do it. I think many people should at least try, though. Like if you don't like it, then don't do it.
Yeah, well, and it, like you said, there's so many resources now, like Code Academy and Solo Learn and stuff that are either free or very cheap. It's like why not at least play with it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know until you try. I think that's one of the difficult things in modern life, is that there are so many avenues. You know, it's no longer you just like do what your parents did, because your parents' job probably doesn't exist. I know my parents' jobs don't exist anymore. So, or if you, where they do exist, they're dying.
Yeah.
And so, so you can't really do that anymore. You can't just do whatever your town does. Like that used to be the way it is. Like
right.
Kind of do the same thing in a given town. Like, oh, it's textiles. Oh, it's mining. It's that doesn't really exist anymore. It changes so rapidly.
Yeah.
You can't just do what your teachers tell you, because they have no idea. They're basically in a dream world, not accountable to customers, paid by the government.
Right.
You know, they have no idea what skills are in demand. And so the onus is really on you as the individual to do this search yourself, find out something that you are good at and which, you know, people will pay you for. And so, yeah, I think the only thing I ever found useful was to just try a lot of stuff. And so I think coding is a good one to try.
Very cool. So what's next for you? Like any new developments beyond Biddle Bootcamp or?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to try to do a Lightning class at some point, like a layer two. Like, so I'm going to have, I think long term I'm going to have two classes. So the way it works is like the Bitcoin class basically reruns every month, and then I add new stuff frequently and sort of improve what I've done in the past. And anybody who's signed up basically gets perpetual access to that class.
Oh, cool.
And so I try to keep people involved. Like, this is the thing I'm going for is a community, partially because, like, when I was getting involved, I never had that. And then when I did encounter that, it was very useful. Basically, I encountered that in a job, right? I found a job where I had these people who were, who had a big incentive to help me learn.
Yeah.
And who I'd interact with on an everyday basis. And that was what really helped me become good at it. And so I'm kind of trying to do something similar there. And part of the way I do it is by, you know, once you pay, you just get access to it forever. And anything new that comes out that's new, you can just go and consume that and learn about it. So, but I'm going to have two different kind of things. One is the base, and partially because they're very different. Like, I think eventually the base layer and the, you know, the second layers are going to kind of diverge, and you'll become kind of an expert in one or the other. Like, today, you know, most web developers don't really understand the base protocol very well of HTTP, the things that the web is built on. They know just the bare minimum, and I think that's great. Like, that's what you want. That's specialization. That's what you want. Today, that's not really possible. You still really need to know if you want to be a upper layer person. You still kind of have to know the base layer because there aren't enough tools to take care of these things for you. But yeah. So I think that's kind of the idea, is eventually they'll kind of diverge. So I have two classes: one about the higher layers, one about the base layer. And I think ideally you'd take both, but you don't need to. And over time, maybe the second layer would become much more popular. That's generally what happened on the web.
Yeah.
So much more useful. There will be much more employment opportunity there, many more interesting applications to be built. But, you know, knowing the fundamentals is still encouraged. And so that's kind of where I'm going. That'll be the next thing I work on. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I also have this little reading group that's pretty cool. It's just like a book club, bitcoinreadinggroup.com. So we just like weekly read about 50 pages. We have couple different groups. One is a computer science. One of them is like Bitcoin focused. Another one's economics focused.
Okay.
And so it's the idea is we're trying to either, mostly just trying to kind of learn about all the peripheral ideas to Bitcoin that are, you know, that we're interested in now that we weren't previously. And we have a kind of a support group to do this with, you know. And I think sometimes when you do something like this socially, this is one of the good things about college, is you're doing it socially, and so you just you tend to be more productive, right?
Like, yeah,
putting a bunch of college kids in a little university town does help them. You know, you just put them all in a room and then they go and do the homework, right? Like, if you're online doing it without, kind of unassisted, or, you know, doing the Goodwill Hunting meme, you know, like, I'm going to go to the library and in $1.50 of late fees, I'm going to get the MIT education.
Yeah.
That actually doesn't work. Almost no one can do that. And so getting a little of that social reinforcement, I think, is good. That's another thing I'm working on a little bit.
So are there specific times to, like, that the book's finished that you jump in, or is it just kind of come in whenever? Or?
Yeah, so the first one we did was we read The Mystery of Banking, and so that one, what I learned with that is, like, people were real enthusiastic about it for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And we got halfway through the book, and we kind of got the idea. Basically, everyone, including me, stopped reading. So what we're going to try to do now is, like, read papers and read chapters.
Okay.
So that basically you never get to the point where you're behind.
Okay.
And so we're going to at least try that a little bit. The idea is long term, if we could have a few thousand people or something. Like, now there's, like, 250. Most of them aren't active, but if we get, like, a lot of people, then we could have it more, you know, we could have more longer form things, and we could have more, you know, if you see a good blog post, you could, like, organize a discussion on it, like, last minute, or, you know, say, hey, tomorrow at 10 p.m. I want to talk this. If one person signs up, it's good. Like, that would be a cool,
yeah,
you know, just build a little software to facilitate these interactions. That would be, like, a long-term goal there, because it is, there's just a lot to learn in order to sort of, in order to be responsible in this sort of monetary transition I think we're embarking on, you do want to learn quite a lot in order to, you know,
yeah, it's
protect your ass.
Yeah, it's multifaceted, yeah, for sure. Hang on. Okay, so you kind of trained all these people now. I don't mean to be impertinent here, but like, what have you built?
Yeah. So, well, the one thing I built was last summer. We built the first ever Lightning hardware wallet at a hackathon.
Okay.
That was like the first thing I did. And after that, I decided to, like, instead of making things myself, I'd try to help build educational stuff. And so yeah, that was like the first. It was really impressive. Like, we won probably the biggest Bitcoin hackathon in the last year. It's like the Building on Bitcoin conference.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's the best conference, in my view. And so yeah, we won the hackathon, which was pretty cool. It was like $20,000.
Nice.
So yeah, that was pretty awesome. And actually, myself and another person on my team, Stepan Snigarev, are going to give a course on building hardware wallets in Munich on like February, in the middle of February sometime. If you just like look on my Twitter feed, you'll see details for that. But he's a friend I made. So that's what we built. And so now that I like, a big reason I did the teaching thing too is it's like just a good way to learn.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I think I've gotten up to speed faster than probably most people who got interested when I did. And part of it's because teaching is maybe the best way to learn.
Yeah, it forces you to learn so that you know what the heck you're talking
about. Yeah, well, when you have to explain something to someone, you realize you don't understand it, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to trick yourself until you have to trick someone else, and they won't be tricked. and so, you know, it's back to the drawing board constantly.
Yeah.
And so there's been a lot of that for me the last 6 months. And so yeah, now I have all these ideas. One idea I have right now is, and I'm tempted to spend the next 3 days just building it, and see if I can build it before my class starts. I probably shouldn't, because I should probably prepare for my class. But you gotta find time somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's the idea.
I only need 24 more hours in each day.
It's a Lightning app, and so I have an idea for a Lightning app. There's this thing called BlockSci, which is like really cool. It's a data science toolkit for Bitcoin. What it does is it loads the blockchain into memory on a massive. AWS, Amazon Web Services machine that you can rent by the, you know, by the hour. And so it's like a huge computer, and then it can query the blockchain really quickly. Like, you know, you can write a query that can query the entire thing in I think it's like a minute or so. I actually haven't, so this is the funny thing is I haven't actually used it yet, because the pain in the ass is that you have to request access to use these machines. And when I did, they didn't get back to me for like a couple days.
Oh.
And so like I had all these ideas and I was going to do it. And then like they didn't get back to me. So I like completely
moved on.
Yeah, I moved on. And so my idea is to make like a hosted version of this that would run on a website. And with Lightning, you could buy access onto one of these, like basically a hosted version of this that runs on a web page by the hour.
Okay.
And so one of the other nice things there is that you can actually have multiple people use one of these big machines. So if I could get...
So you're saying the whole blockchain is loaded up into RAM?
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
basically.
Man.
That's as I understand it, that's... I mean, it's a little confusing because it's they say you can run on like 64 gigabyte GPUs. So obviously, the blockchain's bigger than that.
Yeah.
So I haven't dug in exactly what they're doing, but like if you've seen Dhruv Bansal's HODL waves analysis, I know... Like Adamant Capital is like a Bitcoin-only hedge fund run by Tur Demester. I forget how you say his name. They use BlockSci a lot. You know, it's a really important tool for. I'm sure Nick Carter's team at
CoinMetrics.
I'm sure they're using it a lot. And so, the idea is like you don't actually need your own thing. If I could have multiple people on average using this, if I could have at least two people at all times, if I could have more than one person using it on average at all times, I could actually offer a lower price, I think, than running your own version of it.
Yeah.
You know? So that it'll be kind of tricky. I doubt it'll actually work when I do it. But like, it's at least a cool demonstration of both Lightning and this BlockSci thing. Like, if I could turn it on and make it really easy for people to write some queries. And like, you see, you work in this like notebook type format. It's called a Jupyter notebook. And so one of the cool things is that you can load up a bunch of like queries ahead of time, and the user can just basically choose one of these notebooks, and it'll basically tell you a story in data. You just run each cell of this notebook and it'll give you output, and you can kind of like be taken on a little journey to understand some aspect of the blockchain, right? Like, I'm sure Dhruv Bansal's HODL waves exists in one of these notebooks, and he has all the steps, and he hasn't probably published it,
yeah,
but it's sitting on his computer, and that or similar things could be loaded up into these this hosted version. And so, you know, you could just go buy an hour on Lightning. It costs a couple bucks, and then you'd go and sort of run these cells one by one, and you could be basically like it'd be an interesting kind of educational experience. It'd be a cool demonstration of microtransactions. And I think it would just be a generally kind of a technically interesting project, because like one of the ideas in Lightning is that there's that people want to find ways to like meter resources quickly or on a on a time that's what it's got like Chris Stewart and Sherd Bits is working on that. I'm not sure it's such a good idea, but like I think it's a cool demonstration of the capabilities of Lightning in general, and like maybe it turns out that Lightning's over-engineered and that we don't need all these rapid microtransactions, but that's actually great because it just means we have all this extra firepower, so we never run out of firepower if we kind of over-engineer it in this way. So yeah, I think it's a cool thing to play with, and so that's the next thing I want to work on if I can find some time. It would just be like a cool demonstration of a few interesting projects, and I don't think it would take much code to build. And so the other terrifying thing about this type of thing is if you turn on one of these machines and you forget to turn it off, you can be staring at like a multi-$1,000 bill at the end of the month because they charge dollars per hour, right? Ooh. So it's you can get hit with like $50-$100 per day. You can very quickly run up a huge bill.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of disorganized, and so I've done this on cheaper machines on AWS to get like a $200 bill at the end of the month for stuff I didn't use. It's like, ooh. Oh god. So that's another nice thing about this kind of hosted
reminders.
Version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, self-hosted, right? Okay, sorry.
Yeah. I would host it and people would just access it, right? So they don't have to. They don't even have to have an AWS account.
Yeah. Very cool.
But that's scary for me, because if my code screws up, then I'm looking at the $1,000, the multi-$1,000 thing. But I don't know. It'd be a cool, like, I still haven't seen many Lightning apps I'd actually use. And this is a Lightning app I actually might use.
Right.
Especially if you get the price down, but, like, if you'd actually save a little money by having people share it or something. And it's also, like, I think you have a cool UI for it. You could, like, be like a mainframe. You know, like, in a mainframe, you used to, like, have to schedule time on it. And so we could make this like old school UI to like log in, and I just think it could be like a cute project in the way that Satoshi's Place was a cute project.
Right.
So that's the next thing I'm going to build, and it just takes just got to carve out some time for
it. Right. I understand what you mean about carving out time.
Yeah, it's real hard.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Cool. Justin, how can people keep up with you and what you're doing?
Yeah, so the best way is on Twitter. I'm an inveterate shit poster at this point. So, you've been warned. It's Justin. If you just search Justin Moon on Twitter, you'll find me. It's Justin Moon with underscores on both sides.
Okay.
And that's the best way. I got a bunch of YouTube videos now, like some of them from my meetup. I run the Austin Bitcoin Developer Meetup. I got videos from Biddle Bootcamp. I got videos from my reading group. Last week we did a discussion on the Lightning white paper with Rene Picard. He's like writing a book on Lightning.
It was really
interesting. So got a lot of videos up there, and I don't think not a lot of people know about them.
So y'all go look at the YouTube videos. It's a great resource. It's untapped.
Yeah, make your own too. Actually, that's the go make a podcast, a meetup, or videos. That's the best way to learn.
Yeah. Well, okay. So. We're going to have to go here soon, but briefly, like you had earlier talked about a community. I think community and if you can get it in person, even is a really important thing.
Yeah. You get lonely.
Yeah. Like you were talking about a meetup. Like I have one in my hometown. It's like four people, you know,
but that's enough.
It's good. It's a good start.
That's how mine started. I mean, Austin's got like a million people or something. The first two, like three people showed up. The next one, four people showed up. I was happy as hell.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah. It's just nice to meet other people out there.
Sure. Yeah. And I think many hodlers are isolated. They don't know people who are interested in this, and then they try to get their friends interested, and then they alienate everybody.
Right.
And
it's yeah.
Like, if at the very least start a meetup in order to maintain your current friendship.
Right.
Don't inflict them with your...
So you can offload all your stuff onto...
With your monetary revolution.
Right. Hold that. Save that for other people who want to hear about it. Yeah.
Let them get there on their own.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I think we're at a good time here. So, Justin, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming down to Austin.
Yeah. Checking out this sweet public library.
Yeah, dude, I'm gonna have to come back here sometime. Yeah. This is nice.
It's pretty good here in Austin. I think all the listeners need to move here, and come to my meetup.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. We'll end on that.
Okay, so that was my interview with Justin. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to that. I had a lot of fun doing that. Recording in person is way more fun. Remote interviews are good, and they can be fun, but there's just something different about being in person that's really cool. So you guys go check out Justin's stuff, follow him on Twitter, check out the Biddle Boot Camp if that's something you're interested in. I've got links in the show notes to that, and his Bitcoin Book Club and the Biddle Boot Camp and his YouTube page as well. And I also put links for both the Code Academy and Solo Learn Python classes. So if that's something you want to check out before you go do his Biddle Boot Camp, the links are all there. You guys know the drill. Go to bottomshelfbitcoin.com/donate for links to my Tallycoin page if that's something you're interested in supporting the show. There's also a link there for Tuttle Twins books if you guys are interested in that. Those are really great books to learn about liberty and free market economics and things like that. And, you know, always the best way to help this show is by subscribing so you don't miss a single episode, and then sharing it with your friends and family and whoever else on Twitter. And that way the word keeps getting out, and it helps support this show so that I can keep doing this, because I think you guys enjoy it and I enjoy doing it. So yeah, y'all follow me on Twitter at bottomshelfbtc. Send me a message. My DMs are always open, or you can just at me, and let's talk about stuff. And yeah, next week Alex Hardy is on, and that was a really fun interview too. So you guys come back for that. From Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, I'm Josh Humphrey. Thanks for listening.